Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour tonight, we're going to talk with the Diggable Planets.
They're
in town for Pitchfork, the music festival this weekend. We're going to talk with Ishmael Butler, Butterfly from Diggable Planets.
I saw them play in college.
That's what I want to talk to him about the idea of who's going to be at Pitchfork. And that idea of the reunion tour. I mean, they're playing festivals all around the country, and we will talk with Ishmael Butler coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, my next guest tonight is writer and comedian Jesse Klein. Klein is a stand-up comedian and former writer for SNL, and current head writer and executive producer for Inside Amy Schumer on Comedy Central. She's an Emmy and Peabody Award winner. Her new book is called You'll Grow Out of It, and it's a collection of comedic essays and insights about her life, from tales of relationships, good and bad, transitioning from Miss to Ma'am, and her journey from tomboy to tom man.
Well, it was great being on. Thanks. Bye.
It's a great book about growing up and growing older. Jesse Klein will be at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club, 320 South Plymouth Court, tomorrow at noon for a reading and signing. But tonight, Jesse Klein is my guest at the big table. Jesse, nice to meet you. Great book.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Did you set out? I've read places, you know, the idea of writing a book wasn't necessarily what first came up, but it's not necessarily a memoir.
Yeah, I didn't think of it as a memoir while I was writing it at all. I kind of just thought it was sort of observational, some observations, a smattering of recollections. Yeah, I certainly wouldn't. I didn't think like, oh, I'm going to sit down and tell everyone the very important story of capital M, my capital L life. But yeah, I guess if people see it as a memoir, that's
okay. I mean, it's a relatable book in the sense that it's about becoming an adult. It's really about that transition that we all have to make into adulthood, which
ideally
some people is supposed to happen a lot younger, but
run around it.
Right.
But generally you got to do it.
But that seems to be what the overall focus of the essays and the recollections, the smatterings of recollections is about, the idea of coming to grips with growing older and becoming an adult.
Yeah. I mean, I think that process is easier for some than others. I think it's probably challenging at different times for everybody.
Was it difficult for you as a comedian and in your stand-up, you're very open. I mean, there's not a subject you're not going to take on.
Not
right?
Super coy.
No, you're going to go right at
no,
it.
No, not a real mystery.
But I mean, is it a different kind of emotion to write your stories and tell the personal stories that are in this book? Because there's a lot about breakups and the emotion around it. There's a lot about your insecurities. There's a lot about your personal life, about trying to get pregnant and childbirth. Talk about the range of emotions to put this on paper.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, I mean, there's certainly parts of writing a book. I mean, it takes a long time for me anyway. I am a very slow writer because there's the internet to look at, and that takes a lot of my day and night. But one of the things that was nice about it and that I enjoyed in the process of writing was, you know, when you're writing a book, you can kind of go off on these tangents that are, you know, not necessarily, it's not like being on stage where you feel really pressured to try to like get to a laugh.
Right.
And even though my stand-up, I'm not, you know, I'm not such a joke teller so much as I'm a storyteller, still in the book I felt like, oh, I, you know, in my personal life, things that I take in, I skew towards like an indie dramedy. I like all of the feelings, not just the funny ha-ha ones, and I was like excited to share those.
Well, I mean, the book affords that. I mean, the ability to put this stuff on paper and to be able to go to that intimate moment and then be able to almost talk about the lesson that you learned from it, that stuff that's not afforded to you being on stage in a 15-minute set or a 10-minute set.
Yeah. I just felt like it was a nice opportunity to share some stuff that's a little, not necessarily more painful. Some of it is, but you know, I think like we all have those things in our lives that are painful and embarrassing, and we almost always feel like there's some aspect of it that only we are feeling, and kind of yearn to know that someone else might be feeling it. And I think the more you feel that I'm the only one who feels this, or I'm the only one who's this embarrassed, the more there is certainly many people who are feeling what you're feeling.
Well, it's definitely relatable. I don't know about trying to hook up with the Disney character. I haven't done
that.
Oh,
really?
But no.
That's not what I've heard.
That's not what I've heard. Yeah. So, but it is relatable. I mean, the concepts in the book are concepts, whether it be about insecurities, about relationships, or even just the concept of growing older, that can resonate with everybody. It's not just one gender or another.
Oh, yeah.
It's just
really we're all going to die. Yeah. Oh, we're all flaming out. Everyone in this room right now is just really decaying.
We're all going to die.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, for sure, I think I did write about some things that are specific to being a lady person. But, you know, guys have their own stuff and their own challenges as well.
There's a big chapter towards the end about comedy, about getting into comedy, yeah, and just about your life, you know, making a transition from writer, stand-up comedian to, you know, continuing to work in Hollywood. To me, I felt like to be a microcosm of the whole book, this idea of trying to get up on stage and getting over some of your insecurities and the idea of sitting in. There's a great point where you talk about 1 o'clock in the morning in a New York bar, in a concrete basement, on a chair, and you're like, yeah, what
very
am
Blair
I doing?
Yeah,
you're like, what am I doing here? What I'm doing with my life?
Yeah, a lot of comedy when you start out is very much the end of Blair Witch, where it's just one person facing the wall, the other person, God knows what's happening to them, and yeah, it's horrifying. I mean, my path. I hope that the story is relatable outside of comedy, insofar as you know, I was just really scared to do something creative and to take a risk. When I got out of college, I sort of fell into, purposely fell, but I kind of lucked out into temping at Comedy Central.
Right, right.
Just lucked out in that placement. And then I was like, ooh, I love watching Comedy Central. And I'd always loved comedy, but it didn't seem like a thing that anyone could do. I think now it's, you know, with UCB and YouTube, and it seems much more attainable. But this was, I guess, like mid-90s. That still wasn't a part of it. And I had a job there in development at Comedy Central, and I had a paycheck. And I was, you know, raised in sort of a very humble economic situation. Both my parents worked for the city. I didn't know anybody who worked in entertainment, and I had these kind of secret little yearning, feeling, cravings to do something. But for a million reasons that I think lots of people feel, it just felt like kind of selfish to do something where, right, I wasn't assured of any kind of economic return, let alone success of any kind. And I kind of hid in this job that felt close to,
right,
creativity.
Right.
I think that's also something that people don't talk about a ton. I feel like there's some book that like created the term shadow artist for that, where you're just like, I'm close.
I'm around it.
I'm adjacent.
Well, it's hard. It's definitely, I mean, it's hard. You have a job. You're close to the industry that you want to be in.
Yeah.
You're getting a paycheck.
There's no shame in it. And, you know, it just, for me, I think there was a whole other psychic mechanism going on around the idea of risk too.
Yeah.
Related to just family stuff. And, yeah, it took me years to kind of just one toe in the bath of just slowly trying. And then finally, I kind of had to really let go of the idea of the safety of a paycheck. And it's really hard.
We're talking with Jessie Klein. She's a writer and comedian. She's the current head writer and executive producer for Inside Amy Schumer, Emmy and Peabody Award winner. Her new book, You'll Grow Out of It, is out now. She'll be signing it and speaking at the Standard Club tomorrow, the Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club. Great place, 320 South Plymouth Court in the South Loop. Tonight she's my guest here. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, and my guest tonight, Jessie Klein, writer and comedian. She's the author of You'll Grow Out of It, a collection of comedic essays and insights. She will be speaking and signing the book at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club, 320 South Plymouth Court, tomorrow at noon. She's my guest tonight at the big table. All right, we have to talk about Tomboy versus Tom Man. This is your invention.
Let's get into
Tom
it.
Man.
Yes.
You grew up as a tomboy.
I did. I was a classic. Real classic tomboy. I didn't skirts, no thanks. Dresses, no thanks. I just anything that like was very typically girly to do, I just was like, oh, that's a hard pass for me. Why would I like have something that you could see my underwear? I want to just be in my pants.
And that continued through
college.
And
I mean, I'm sitting here in a dress right now by force because I was just on TV. But the minute I am in my hotel room, I am getting back into my union suit. Yeah. No, I just have always been, I just like to be comfortable.
And a lot of the book is about that transition as you made that transition to adulthood and how you kind of had to fight to either keep that or change because of the forces in society when it comes to women and beauty and all the kind of things around it. So talk about that trying to stay a Tom man.
In some ways, I think I at a certain point was like, I really got to get out of this Tom man thing. The idea of like a tomboy growing it, he was like, oh, that's a cute thing. And then, but Tom man sort of sounds ugh, like no one's like, oh, how cute. I wore a backpack until I was 30. And then one day I was meeting one of my best friends at a bar, and I didn't have a purse. I just had like a big maroon backpack, you know, for my stuff. And I met my friend and I walked up to her. She was at the bar, and I put my backpack on the ground, and she looked at me, and she said in the way that only like a loving friend will say, she's like, Jess, your backpack's hurting my feelings.
It's hurting my feelings.
Yeah. I think at a certain point, I mean, I did start to feel kind of attracted to trying out some, you know, typical girl stuff. I wear makeup. I do now own dresses and shirts that I wear of my own volition.
But that's
not
a big part. That's a big part of the book as well. It's just this concept of beauty and the industry around it. I mean, there's a lot that goes in. There's a whole thing about growing older and the difference between, you know, what you can be to get away with beauty, a supermodel or eccentric, I think that's what it is like.
Well, yeah, it's like how women, there's like only a few paths for women in aging. It's like having observed like, okay, well, I hope one day I get to be 75 years old. And like, how are women allowed to be old? And it seems like you're either just like someone who is born a supermodel and stays one. So that's a kind of a limited door. Or you are rich and you wear your money.
Right.
Or if neither of those are open to you, you're just an eccentric and you wear like a big hat.
You gotta wear
big
hats,
glasses,
right?
And like crazy tights. Yeah. That's definitely gonna be me, I hope. Yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, you have a couple chapters that are sort of associated to beauty and growing older, but you talk a little bit about at the core of it, women are either wolves or poodles,
uh-huh.
And there's a whole chapter about this. It's
interesting
for me, but the idea that there's poodles and wolves. Explain.
Poodles, wolves, go forwards.
The clock is ticking.
Sure. Well, this came out of when I was at SNL, I was wandering the halls one night, and I ran into this other writer, fabulous lady named Emily Spivey, and I think she would admit neither of us looked or felt our best. And there was a TV on, and Angelina Jolie was on, and we were just staring at her, and I think Emily was one who said, are we the same species as her? Like, I know on paper we are. And I was like, yeah, it's like the way a wolf is technically kind of the same animal as a toy poodle. Like, they're kind of dogs,
right,
but they have nothing to do with each other. And then I was like, so some women are like poodles and some women are wolves. Angelina Jolie, full poodle. And I am a full wolf. And it's kind of a silly metaphor, but what I'm trying to express with it is like, I think for some women, the poodles, there is this relationship to their own femininity that feels very effortless. And it's just like those women who, no matter what they're wearing, they just always kind of exude this like ease with being a woman. And I have been in more than one situation where I thought I might have to call the police to help me out of Spanx because I was stuck. And I am not kidding. It happened to me the other day. I was like, I might need a scissor. And that's when you're a wolf.
That's when you're a wolf.
That's
and
when
and
you're a wolf.
You kind of talked about...
And one is not better than the other.
Right. There's also an anecdote in the book about when you bought a dress and you went on the subway. And, you were just as great. I'm going to walk past the people are going to turn heads. And then there was a woman who came out who was not dressed up, who was just, you know, as dressed down as you can be. And everyone gravitated towards the poodle.
Yeah, she was just, she had that poodle thing going on. Yeah, I thought I looked bananas good and was ready to just like, you know, fend men off. Just be like, excuse me, please leave me alone. And like, that was not necessary. Yes, I was completely unaccosted. And yeah, just buying that dress, putting that dress on, putting shoes with it, it was an effort. And this woman was basically in a sack, and she just was a poodle. She just was. Part of it is, it's not even that poodles are not more beautiful than wolves. She was, it's just like that ineffable, and you know, like a quality that poodles
have. It exudes,
have.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a lot in this book that's about not only just society's perception of beauty, but your own thoughts about it, or your own insecurities around it. There's
sure.
a great line in the lingerie chapter about crying in the dressing room about the image that was being given in the mirror that you were seeing. It just wasn't what you wanted it to be. Like,
yeah.
And there was something profound about the idea that many women go through that, many men go through that. But,
sure.
but there's this idea that as much as we try and we try to put things on and we try to gussy ourselves up, sometimes we're never going to be able to break through to be okay with who we are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Victoria's Secret catalog is one of the most insidious publications ever printed on paper. Men probably feel a little differently about it, but... And I still open it and look at it, even though I know it will make me hate myself.
I don't speak for men by any stretch, but I can't stand
again,
that.
Again, not
thing.
What I've
heard. Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, it's. I mean, well, yeah, also now in a world of internet porn,
yeah, right.
You don't need it.
Who needs it?
Yeah, you got faster ways to get there.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, that catalog is so kind of ubiquitous in terms of this brand that goes beyond the underwear. It's sort of, this is what you're supposed to look like when you're in your bra and underwear. And I don't know any woman who is looking like a matching set. What am I, the Queen of England? All the time? Well, no, thank you. Yeah, it's real hard.
You know, there's also a really kind of funny essay about getting your first bra where your mom
sure.
takes you down to, and you think it's going to be this amazing
oh,
experience
yeah.
and it really is.
No, I basically I'm envisioning that it's going to be like being on a yacht. I think every woman has like that a first bra shopping experience. And I, as a little tomboy, kind of was like, ooh, now I get to be a lady sex person. And then a lot of bra fitters are older Eastern European or Russian ladies, often Jews, sometimes not. Much love. These are my peeps. But
multicolored hair.
Sure. Yeah.
Form.
An
yeah.
interesting color hair. And they are a little brusque and they kind of measure you the way like a young foal gets put in a bridle for the first time. It's like, get used to this. It's your new life. Put this bit in your mouth. And it doesn't. Yeah, and you walk away with something that's kind of the color of, like, the original copy of the Constitution. Just, like, a faded, not white,
right.
not
Band-aid
brown.
Band-aid colored,
a
right?
A Band-aid, an industrial. Yeah.
It's but not, it still made, you still remarked that it still made you feel good. Like, you're like.
At least I was a part of the club. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I was a very, very late bloomer. And most of the girls in my class had a bra before I did. And it felt horrible. I was like, what's wrong with me? And the boys in our class, I don't know if this was like a thing that you guys, I don't know if kids still do this, but they did this thing where they would run around. Like one day the boys just started running around. They would come up to you and put their arm around your shoulder and kind of like massage
right.
your shoulder. And they'd be like, hey, what's up? And then they'd run away. It was such a stupid boy thing to do. But they, and then it came out that they were like checking to see who was wearing a bra. But yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what stupid behavior to succumb to. But I was like, well, I wish they felt what they were looking for, these complete idiots. And I was one of the unlucky few, although in retrospect, probably lucky.
Jesse Klein is the writer and comedian. She is the executive producer and head writer for Inside Amy Schumer on Comedy Central. She won an Emmy and a Peabody for that show. Her new book is called You'll Grow Out of It. She's going to be signing books and reading from the book at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club, 320 South Plymouth Court, tomorrow at noon. That's in the South Loop. We'll continue our conversation after the news here with Jesse Klein. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, writer and comedian Jessie Klein. She is the head writer and executive producer for Inside Amy Schumer. She wrote for SNL. She's a stand-up. You can see her stuff on Comedy Central all over the place. Her new book is called You'll Grow Out of It. It's a collection of comedic essays about growing up and growing older. She is going to be signing books at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club, downtown Chicago, tomorrow, 320 South Plymouth Court at noon. All right, so one of the things that I kind of mentioned about growing up and growing older, there are a lot of chapters about to transition to adulthood, and one of them is about the word ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Yes, go
talk
on.
Talk about the idea that as a younger woman, you almost 100% get miss.
Sure, you're a miss
for a
long time.
And then at some point or another, society deems you to be a ma'am. Talk about this.
Yes, one day, just like in a movie, suddenly a long shadow appears over you, and you're like, what is that? And it's the cloud of ma'am that has blocked the sun. Yeah, it's, I am at one, I hate ma'am, and I'm also embarrassed that I care, but I'd be lying if I said it didn't just hurt my heart a scotch every time I hear it. Yeah, men get to be sir.
Right.
You're a little boy. Like, at a certain point, if you go to a boy becomes sir, and you just stay sir until you drop dead one day. It's just sir forever. And sir is kind of cool. It's like, you know, Sir Paul McCartney and James Bond, you know, are sir. You're sir. And there's no judgment in sir. It's just respect. But with women, you're miss. And then for no conceivable reason, the term with which you are addressed has built into it the addresser's understanding / guess of how old you are.
Yeah, right.
And that makes no sense. And I am all for, you know, addressing people like a respectful address, a term of address.
Sure.
But ma'am just doesn't, it doesn't sound good. And I think part of it is working backwards from older women are just not, ultimately not really respected.
Could it be an
society
anomaly? Could it be someone in the way that they were brought up and they decide that ma'am is what they call it, and the next time you get a miss, you're back to miss?
I occasionally get a miss, but I
uh-oh.
Again, it's disgusting how happy it makes me because I'm fully 40 years old. And so, and there's no, I mean, I'm not like, I think I look, I don't want to be too self-deprecating. I think I look fine, but I'm not a genetic freak where I think someone doesn't have a sense of how I shouldn't be getting carded for alcohol. I wish we could have the equivalent of sir, where it's just one thing always.
I mean, that's a thread throughout the book as well, just to, as women grow older and how some of the things change. I mean, obviously the business that you're in, the industry that you're in has a rampant problem with ageism with women.
Yes.
I mean, that's like, and that's the thing you
that's
have.
An understatement. Yes.
You have dealt with in your young career as well.
Yes.
I'm being 40 years
Thank
old.
Thank you for calling my career
no,
young.
But I mean, the idea that, I you know, kid. We hear this all the time with some of the stars of Hollywood, as they get older, it becomes more difficult for them to attain any sort of part, like any sort of meaty part that's beyond playing a grandmother.
Yeah.
And you had a similar experience where an executive called it out. I mean, she called it out. So talk about that.
Oh, my God. I mean, I am not really an actress. I like to perform and I do stand up, but God knows I'm not in that world very much. But to the teensy degree that I occasionally am, I was at, in my stand-up career, this is not that long ago, I was doing stand-up and then was told that there was a mixer with executives from a network and we're supposed to go be at this restaurant with them, which was horrible. And anyway, I was like, ugh, do I have to? And they were like, literally, yes,
you do.
Not a choice.
The contract states.
Yeah,
need to be there,
actually,
right?
Go. And this woman who is a casting executive at a network came up to me and she was a little drunk, I think. And she was just like, Jesse, I am such a fan of yours. And I, you know, thank you. And she's like, you have to move to LA. You have to. And I, you know, it's like when someone's, you're just like, I'm going to meet you where your energy is. So I was like playing along. I'm like, oh, why? And she's like, so I can cast you in one of my shows. And I'm like, amazing. And I was kind of joking, but in the back of my head, I was like, oh, I'm going to cast one of my shows. And
you're already imagining the emails you're going to send to family.
I'm packing
like that,
up the hatchback. And so I said, I was like, well, what would you cast me as? And she takes a few steps back from me, and she looks at me, and she just goes, you could play Natalie Portman's mom. And my head exploded, and I like booked out of there, and I immediately Googled. I mean, I had a sense, but I was like, wait, how old is Natalie Portman?
Right.
And fact checked me, but I believe that she's 6 years younger than me. Wow. I mean, not more.
That is a story that we hear all the time. I mean, I don't understand, you know, why that continues when there's so much pressure that's put on the industry. I mean, and you talk about an Amy Schumer show. I mean, there's sketches about it. You guys are really kind of getting at it. And it seems like, you know, with that and the press and so many articles about, you know, just the idea that the typecasting that goes for women at a certain age, why does it continue?
Why isn't the sky pink? Why isn't it a cooler color sometimes? I mean, because the world is filled with nonsense. Because of sexism and... because of sexism.
For you, I mean, to be in that industry.
I wish that had a funnier tag.
But as to be involved with one of the shows, Amy Schumer's show is groundbreaking in the sense that it does take on those taboos. It tackles a lot of stuff. Won a Peabody for it. Yeah, they don't just give Peabodies to the popular shows. I mean, there's a reason they give it for social political issues.
We liked getting that.
So, I mean, for you being in the business and finding this opportunity where you are working on a sketch show that able to do that, that's great. But a lot of women don't get that chance, and they do work in this blatantly sexist environment.
Yeah. What are you going to do about it? Let's like sit down and like draw up some plans. Yeah, I think at least it's so rampant in every industry in different ways. And Hollywood is very bad in a specific way, but women deal with all kinds of sexism everywhere. I think at least within Hollywood, it's still very bad. The ENSI bit of progress that I think is being made, and it's people always ask like, is it so much better? Like, women are having a moment. And it's like, no, it still super, super sucks.
Yeah, right.
But the ENSI bit of progress that I think is being made, and I guess there are equivalents for this in other industries as well, is basically when women take charge and the number of shows and movies feels like more progress in TV than movies for sure. But the number of shows that are created by women and written by women for women and men. Oh, that's a sound.
It's a weather outlet.
Oh, okay, cool. That just taking the reins and writing a show. Yeah, and I'm regretting saying for women because I think one of the more insidious kind of, how to put it, effects of sexism in movies and TV is this notion that women's stories, things that have to do with a woman's life, are inherently more trivial than a man's. And I think that was a huge part of the reason there weren't that many stories that were kind of allowed to be on TV. It's like, well, that's just little stuff.
From your vantage point as an executive producer and head writer, do you see that changing? I mean, you were in development at Comedy Central. You were able to see it at a certain point, and now as an executive.
I think it has changed. It has changed a lot since, you know, when I worked at Comedy Central. I was there. I was never in charge of development there. You know, I started, and I was, when I left, I was like a director.
But you were in the office with some pretty influential comedians.
And the people who worked there were always great, but there was definitely more of a fear about, in terms of the audience and what men would watch, and men want to watch men, and they want to watch women jump on trampolines, or they want to see women in bikinis, and that's all fine, but like, they won't watch women driven, like a woman being funny. And definitely in the last few years, obviously with shows like Inside Amy Schumer and Broad City, which is incredible, and more they are now, the door is way more open, and I think a lot of that has to do with attitudes changing, I think, and it has to do with women, more and more women taking the kind of risk I was talking about earlier and being like, screw it, I'm a comedian, I'm a writer.
Jesse Klein's my guest tonight. She's a writer, comedian. Her book is called You'll Grow Out of It. It's a collection of comedic essays about growing up and growing older. Jesse Klein's going to be at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club in the South Loop at 320 South Plymouth Court tomorrow at noon for a reading and signing. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up here with Jesse Klein. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio for the hour, writer and comedian Jesse Klein. The book is called You'll Grow Out of It, a collection of comedic essays. And it really is, we kind of established it's not a memoir, but there are recollections to your life that do sort of play it out that way. I mean, it is a collection of comedic essays, but I find myself at the end of the book going, oh, how does this relate? How does, was she seeing Connie when she was with Dale? You know, like that. But that's the point that, I mean, it does kind of feel like we're sort of, you know, getting to know you and understanding the life that you've lived.
Yeah, I mean, I at the end, I kind of just was, I plowed through writing these chapters in no particular order. I kind of wrote them as they came to me. And then when there was a stack at the end, we were like, well, how are we going to arrange this stack? And it felt like, sorry, I just completely burped. It felt like, full wolf. It felt like, yeah, like, I mean, partially laziness because it seems easier. But there was a loose chronological development of like, well, in the layering of life experience, it does feel like they kind of feed into each other in this progression.
Well, towards the end of the book, you talk a lot about life more recent. You talk about the birth of your child. You talk about the chapter getting an epidural.
Yes.
Get the epidural. But there really is, again, the theme that comes out of this is the pressure that is put on women to do it the right way or to almost make motherhood standard. And that's just not the way it is.
It's not. Oh, my God. It's not the way it is on so many levels. Yeah, I mean, I think, look, women from the minute they're born experience a whole, and again, men feel many pressures as well. I just think there's a level of detail and minutia that women are worried about that is very specific. And then you think you've experienced it, and then you get pregnant. And
it's amped up.
Yeah, and have a child. Having a child, whether you were pregnant to have that child or have a child another way. Yeah, from the pregnancy angle, I was not prepared for how public, I think any pregnant woman will tell you, just people, it is shocking how much people feel free to come up to you on the street and just say and stuff.
Give you advice or
touch you or tell you. I mean, so yeah, the story I tell in the book is I was a very large pregnant person, but I was online at a sandwich shop waiting for food, and a woman in front of me turned around and she goes, when are you due? Benign enough. And I said, whatever, June, whatever. And she, that's standard. And then she went, are you having a natural birth?
Right.
And I was like, what the F? What? And I just said, hells no. And I was like, clearly we must be done. And then she said, oh, are you getting an epidural? And I was like,
wow.
I can't.
It's a very personal question.
I was like, what? And I said at the very least, because at the time I was actually planning on having an elective, totally unhealth related C-section. I was not interested in labor at all, and I had no guilt about it. And the only reason I didn't do that was because the baby was born a couple weeks early, and it took me by surprise. But I had very clearly instructed my doctor. I not only do I want the epidural, I want you to turn it until the knob comes off. and God bless her, I mean, she was all for it. She was like, whatever. Barring whatever health reason that might exist, if it's possible, that's what we'll do.
Well, there's just so much. I mean, that's like the underlying thought of that chapter, and even the chapter about infertility and that comes after, is that it really does show how much everybody wants to be in everybody's business, and there's some sort of standard to in which this sort of is supposed to play out.
Yeah, I mean, I do think women deal with this more, and especially around birth and motherhood, there is this expectation that's created. And I should just say, I am in favor of women doing what makes them happy, and if that's natural, I don't like calling it natural birth because I think natural is part of. Using that word is part of what creates a value judgment that if you have a C-section or you have an epidural, that somehow you like cheated. And there's no cheating. There's just having a baby and you and the baby getting out alive and healthy. And that is the only goal. But I think women fall prey to these pressures, this notion that there is a more heroic, a more natural version of these things where you know, and as I write in the book, that to me has a very scurrilous relationship to women needing to suffer. And that you aren't really a woman unless you've completely self-abnegated your own needs. And you're not really a mother unless anything that you need is erased. And
that's something that's not shared by men. You kind of make the joke. It's a great joke about no one ever says,
yeah.
I'll let you tell.
No, well, yeah, no one ever asks a guy, oh, are you having a natural vasectomy or are you having a natural root canal? Like, right. No. And absolutely not.
It's not something that's usually discussed.
No, yeah. It's not only not discussed, it's not a thing.
It's not a thing.
No, and why? I mean, because it's so crazy and it's so insidious. And it's funny because I did that chapter, to my great delight, was just excerpted in the New York Times. And I really wanted it to be out there. And people had very strong reactions to it. And what was shocking was the number of people who kind of were like, well, why? You shouldn't tell me to get the epidural. And I just really want everyone to do what they want. And I really feel like a lot of women, and I have no judgment about anyone's choices, but I think women get pressured by many different forces into thinking it's not okay to do anything to take care of themselves. And I will also say, you know what really hurts? Contractions. I mean, it's not like I didn't spend 5 hours having them. And like, I mean, I was like, okay, per my doctor's instructions, I kind of stayed at home as long as I could. And it's beyond. And I'm sure for other women wrote in. I mean, lots of people commented on the story in the Times, and people were like, it was a breeze, and great.
Great.
Great. Amazing.
For you, I mean, the title of the book is You'll Grow Out of It. And, you know, you really do chronicle your life in comedy and how you took risks and you had to jump off that cliff to be able to follow your dream. You talk about, you know, you're sort of moving from tomboy to tom man and working mm-hmm. out of that. In, for you now here, sitting in this studio in Chicago, I mean, have you grown out of it? Do you consider yourself an adult? Do you? I know it's a big question, but
yeah.
You know,
you can't see, but I'm crawling under the table. And going
do you
to
feel?
The
I mean, do you feel like you've made that transition into adulthood?
I mean, on some days yes, and on some days no. Primarily no. No, I think I always kind of just walk around the world looking at a lot of stuff feels very surreal to me. You know, I still, when I fill out an insurance form, I'm like, I can't believe I'm supposed to do this myself. You know what I mean? So I'm supposed to do my forms. It all feels really intense. There's some stuff I think I haven't grown out of it. I think there's a fair amount I've gotten used to. I've gotten used to it.
That's
more than
book.
I've grown
it.
I've gotten used. Gotten used, oh my
it.
God, I think that is the second
is.
Book.
This
we've
be a
cracked
trilogy.
It. Yes.
Be a trilogy. We just
oh,
need a third
I'm
one,
sending
right?
you a check. Thank you. I've gotten used to it. I'm not kidding. That is a good title.
There you go. Writer and comedian Jessie Klein, her new book is You'll Grow Out of It. She's the head writer and executive producer for Inside Amy Schumer on Comedy Central, which just wrapped up its fourth season. You can check out Jessie. She'll be reading and signing books at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club, 320 South Plymouth Court. That's tomorrow at noon in the South Loop. Jessie Klein, thanks for being my guest
Thank
tonight.
Thank you so much. It was really fun.